Thank you. So I wanted to start with a letter. We get about 8,000 emails a month or a week from different parents and teenagers who read our website as just a source of advice. So I wanted to read an email that I got recently. I thought it would demonstrate some of the stuff that we're talking about tonight. Dear Vanessa, hi, my name is Jennifer and I am 12 years old. I saw your advice column on your website and I think it is totally, totally KA, killer awesome. I have a very, very serious problem. The problem is my mother is really, really annoying. I don't mean just like normal mom annoying. I mean like really, really uber pretend I'm sleeping in the car on the way home from school annoying. Let me give you just a few examples so that you know that I'm so not exaggerating here. Real email. Okay. Number one, what is it with moms and leaving dishes in the sink? Every time I leave a cup out for like a day, tops 2 or 3 days in the sink or by my bedside table, she totally freaks out at me. I mean, come on. Is it like, it's like bad for the environment washing them that much. Hello, global warming. Two, she like definitely doesn't believe in iChat study sessions. We do talk about school on AIM. I mean, we talk about who wore what the cafeteria was serving for lunch, and occasionally actual homework. Why doesn't she get that? And not only do I use it for academic reasons, but also when I go on AIM, it is really important for my social development. I read it in an article in 17 magazine. Number three, and this one really ticks me off. All I wanted for Hanukkah was tickets to the Jonas Brothers. OMG, they are like so THM, hot, 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 he, smiley face, BT Dubs, Nick is my favorite. Anyways, they didn't get me tickets because my mom said they were too expensive and she didn't want us to go unchaperoned. Ugh, she's so annoying. Last, what is so hard to believe about Twitter? It is so cool. She so doesn't get it and thinks Twitter is some kind of native Californian bird. Ugh, do you see what I mean? I'm hoping you can give me some advice on helping her be less obnoxious and more reasonable. BTW, she might be reading this right now because I have a sneaking suspicion that she reads my emails. As I stated in our fight last week, so against my rights as a citizen of the US of A. HK, HK, hugs and kisses, Jennifer. So, these are the kind of emails we get a lot where there's just kids are living in their online world and they feel like parents are living totally offline. Now, we see a lot of parents who are actually going on Facebook, which we're going to talk about a lot. Is anyone on Facebook? You can admit it. Okay, good. Okay, so we'll talk about that next. Okay, so a little bit about my background. I grew up here in Beverly Hills. I went to Marlborough High School. It's an all-girls school in Hancock Park. And then I went to Emory University. And while I was here, my dad was extremely strict. Extremely strict. And I was actually caught sneaking out of my window. And I was grounded for about 4 months. And during that time, I couldn't be on the internet, I couldn't be on cell phones, I couldn't watch TV, and I ended up writing down all the reasons why I was so angry. And my dad was like, this is actually really helpful. You should write more about this. So what I did is I actually ended up interviewing about 700 other teenagers about what they wish their parents would know and why they haven't, why don't they usually tell them. It sort of came about and it turned into a book, which is the book I have over there, which is You're Grounded. And while I was at Emory, I decided to be a Chinese major, which doesn't really have to do with what I'm doing now. But at the time, I literally thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to pick a major just because it sounds impressive, which is horrible. When I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I should do what I think will get me a secure job in the future. And my dad was like, it's great. You'll get a JD, MBA. It'll be perfect. You'll have job security forever. And I did it. I didn't even stop to think if I liked it or not, because that's what I thought you were supposed to do. And I started the Chinese major. I was actually the only Caucasian in the major. It was all native Chinese heritage speakers. Which was very interesting. And my junior year, I wanted to write a thesis. So I went to China and I lived there for about 6 months. And I did research on underground Chinese hip hop and urban youth, which was the closest academic-y fun topic I could possibly think of. And as I was doing it, I was interviewing a lot of these Chinese rappers who were like 16 or 17, asking them what they were so angry about. And I'm thinking it's China, the government, repression. And they were like, we're really mad at our parents. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's a universal thing. I'm right back to where I started. This has to be the universe's way of telling me this is what I'm supposed to do. So I ended up sort of shifting it into differences between American and Chinese youth. I took my bat mitzvah money without my parents knowing. My mom actually ended up helping me in the end, but my dad definitely did not know. And self-published the book and hired some employees in India to help me build my website. And thank goodness, after moving home, it sort of exploded because we were able to write parenting advice from the kids' perspective, and now we have about 20 teen writers who write what they wish their parents would know. So today I'm going to share a lot of the things that they've been sharing with me. So one of the first things is privacy. The idea of privacy has totally changed for my generation, the digital generation. An example I like to give is I work with a lot of kids and I see them privately. I work with a lot of families on like self-esteem. And so I was working with them and they emailed me. I got a little email. Vanessa, you have to join our social network. I'm like, ugh, I'm already on Facebook. I might as well try it. So I go on, it's redgirls.com. I'm like, what is this? And it's a social network where girls track and share their periods together. And I was like, first of all, ew. Second of all, where is the lines of privacy? When did this become public information? And it sort of was a very good example of the ideas of they didn't think that was private at all. They thought that was a great thing you could bond over. Whereas for me, and I'm only 5 or 6 years older than them, I'm 23 now, I was like, wow, that is way too much information. So that those lines between home life, private life, and school life have completely blurred. Before, kids would go to school and get mad at a friend. I hate you, you're not coming to my birthday party. You know how kids get really angry. And then they'd come home, they'd have a snack, they'd talk to mom, play with their brother, have dinner, go to sleep, sort of let it kind of calm down. They'd go to school the next day and they were still angry, but it sort of had calmed down a little bit. Now what's happening is they go to school, they get angry, and they instantly whip out their cell phone, they text their friends, they Twitter their friends, it goes out to all their news feeds, they go on Facebook, it goes in their MySpace page, it like goes to all these different places, and it's up there forever. So the lines and the idea of instantness has really changed. There's no lag time. And as kids, and I was telling Rabbi Wilpy that my brain isn't even finished developing. It doesn't even supposedly finish developing until 25. We don't have the way to stop ourselves and think to ourselves, is this a good idea? Should I be doing this now? Do I want this up forever? Techno-perfection. This is also another idea that I'm seeing a lot of now where, you know, at 12, 13, they always want to be famous for a little bit. You know, my 8-year-old sister, she's like really wants to be, you know, the next Hannah Montana. So what happens is they're one YouTube video away from 1 million people seeing them. That's a lot of power to give a young kid or even a teenager or even a tweenager. And this has sort of shifted the way that youth are thinking about themselves and their online reputation. If they know that they could be famous or if they're around, anyone could snap a picture of them at any time because everyone has cell phone cameras or flip cameras. And so that changes the idea of, wow, someone might take a picture of me right now. I was at a birthday party with a bunch of 15-year-old girls and they were like, get me from my right side, it's better. You know, and I didn't ever really think about that. And they're like, well, this might go on Facebook and then I might get tagged and then they might see it at college and at my job and then all my teachers will see it. And it's a very, very different way of thinking about your pool party. And I call it techno-perfection. There's HD makeup now. You know, because kids are actually like, well, I might be on YouTube. I might be able to, you know, everyone will see me. I have to make sure that this profile picture looks good. Cotton candy friending is one thing that I talk a lot about with the kids. When I speak to students, actually, it's always really interesting. There's a big variety. You know, you have kids who are on Club Penguin and Webkinz, 5, 6, and 7, 8, some. And then they start to migrate over to older social networks. Then eventually at 12, 13, they go on Facebook and MySpace. So, you know, even at 7 years old, they're already starting to click. I was watching my niece and she was, I like left my computer on the counter and I went to the kitchen to get something and I came back and she had typed in Dora the Explorer into YouTube, got to YouTube, typed in Dora the Explorer and was watching Dora the Explorer videos on YouTube. She's 7. I was like, wow, she is, just, it's just so easy. And she goes, I love Dora. I was like, well, you know, they're very, very empowered by it. So with Cotton Candy Friends, if you talk to them about this idea of how friendships are changing, and I hope that during the question and answer we can talk a little bit more about this, how relationships are changing. I got home from college, and at Emory I had like 1,276 friends, something like that. And I was like, oh, it's going to be great. I'm going to come back home to LA, and I'm going to have all my friends to hang out with. And I got home, and I realized I actually didn't have any friends to hang out with at all. I had friends who knew exactly what I had for breakfast and what I did this weekend and my favorite movie and what Harry Potter character I would be, but actually what I was like, they didn't know. And I think I always compare it to cotton candy. When kids get to like a fair, they always beg for cotton candy. You know, they beg to be on Facebook. And it looks so exciting and so big and colorful. And they get it and they eat it and they're hungry 20 minutes later. They want real food. It kind of leaves a fake chemical taste in your mouth. It makes your hands sticky. And finally, now we're starting to see some of the aftermath of this, where kids go on some of these social networks and they realize they get into some of these sticky situations. Maybe someone didn't post a bad picture of them, but what if they were at a pool party and someone posted a picture in a bathing suit? And they just really don't want that picture up there. Nothing's inappropriate, but they just don't like it. And they go to their friend and they say, "Hey, you know, Mary, will you take it down for me?" And she goes, "No, I love that picture of me." She goes, "But it makes me uncomfortable, but I really like it." And slowly these sort of stickiness starts to come, and you have to really trust your friends. So when I explain the idea of cotton candy friends, and I really hope that you'll go home tonight and talk to them about it, they'll actually probably start to tell you some of their own stories where they felt like they got into sticky situations, or that they feel like there's not that real friendship there. And a lot of times you'll hear them say, like, "I'm lonely," or "I'm upset." And you'll say, "Well, why don't you call someone?" A lot of it is because they actually don't know who to call, because when they call them, they don't know how to talk about it. They've lost some of that communication and those social skills. Identity and blurred lines. The dual representation is one thing that I think that kids are more and more, is happening more and more. What happens is you have an online reputation. I call it online reputation management. And then you have real world reputation. You know, when kids get ready for school, they think very carefully about their hair, what they're going to wear. Maybe not boys. Maybe not boys aren't there yet. But, you know, they're thinking about what they're going to look like, how they're going to present themselves to each other. And then what happens is they project a certain thing out for the other people. They see, oh, you're a cool girl, you're a preppy girl, you're a sports guy, you're a skater, all those things. Well, the same thing is also happening online. They're presenting themselves with an online reputation. All those things on someone's, you know, Club Penguin page or Facebook page mean a lot to us. We see that lingo. You know, I might be able to look at someone's bands that they list or their favorite movies, and I could tell, oh, you know, they like to party. Or, oh, they're very outgoing and bubbly. Because there's that e-tact or web language. I think that body language has sort of shifted into web language, which I'm more than happy to talk about later as well. I'm covering some big topics a little bit quickly just because I want to make sure that we can leave lots of time for questions. And also, we have articles written on a lot of these topics by myself and the teens afterwards. And I will send an email out to anyone who wants it with the articles, with some detailed explanations. We have a lot of YouTube videos that sort of go into it in depth. So feel free to sign up for that. This is my Facebook page. I wanted to have this up there to sort of give an example and sort of explain some of the terms and what things are. We can bring it back up when we're asking questions. Facebook is a social network. This is Club Penguin, Webkinz, Flickr, MySpace. These are all social networks. A social network, people often ask me, what exactly is a social network? A social network is a website with shared interests with a group of users. So a group of users will come together over a shared interest. Facebook, the shared interest is friends. Flickr, the shared interest is photos. MySpace, the shared interest is music and friends. Webkinz and Club Penguin, the shared interest is these cartoon characters and games. So you can see on here, you see Facebook, and then this is my profile page. And over here, you'll see it says newsfeed. And you can see all the different things that people have given me. Someone gave me a virtual glass of wine. If you see a lot of $1 and $2 charges on your credit card, that probably is your kids buying little trinkets and things online and sending them to each other. I don't know why someone sent me a virtual glass of wine. I couldn't do anything with it, but that's what happens. And a mini feed and a news feed, I just want to give out some of the terms so that when you actually begin to talk to your kids about it, you can be speaking their language. A mini feed and a news feed are basically aggregations of what all your friends are doing. So when I said earlier that if you get mad at a friend and then they sort of come together, what they do is they'll go on their news feed or their mini feed and they'll type, you know, right now if you go to my Facebook, it says speaking at Temple Sinai. That's what it actually says right now. And it went out into all of my friends' news feeds. It said, you know, Alex's friend Vanessa is speaking at Temple Sinai. So even though it went out to all my 100 and whatever, I think I have 986 friends, went out to all 986 friends, it also went out to all of their friends via their news feed. So those are just some things that we can talk about a little bit later about how it sort of gets, the access is much, much bigger. Twitter, have you heard about Twitter? Yes. I just wanted to briefly just describe what it was. Twitter is a social network where the shared interest is, what are you doing right now? That's the shared interest. You have 140 characters to say what you are doing right now. So if you were to go on my Twitter right now, there's a picture of this room, which I took when I got here, And it says, speaking at Temple Sinai, and I geotagged the location in Los Angeles. So all of my Twitter followers, I have people on Twitter who are following me, and they get updates of whatever I want to send them. They'll know where I am. Teenagers' Twitters are often like, I got up, I ate breakfast, I went pee, I was late to school. I'm like, well, no wonder you were late to school. You were Twittering all morning. So a lot of them, they have a lot of these instant updates. And we were talking earlier about why would you want to use this? And I'm going to end on this, then we can start asking questions. The most popular question I get from parents, we get a lot of questions from parents. The most popular one is, why would my kid want to use these social networks? Why? And I always say, for us, the answer is why not? This is something that we have grown up with. It is a part of our identity. It is a part of socialization. If you're not on some of these things, or you're not on AIM after school or doing iChat study sessions, for us, it's like you're out of the loop. It's just like going to a dance or talking to your friend after school or going to a local hangout. This is our socialization, so we don't understand why you wouldn't want to use it. So hopefully we can sort of start taking questions. I don't want to go over my 15 minutes. You want me to keep going? Okay. I have plenty more to talk about. I wanted to talk about, there's a couple of different like unspoken rules in the online sphere. I call this e-tact, you know, where you would never break up with someone via email. That's e-tactless. And when I give this presentation to kids, we talk about the 13 holy cyber citizenship laws. And this is with younger kids. And I'll actually say to them, you know, you were taught when you go to a park, a public park, and you walk around with other kids, you would never graffiti on the wall. You would never, you know, pee in the middle of the sidewalk. You're not being a good citizen if you do that. It's the same thing when you go to websites. You would never write on someone's wall. That would be considered graffiti. You would never ruin that space because it is a public space. A park is virtually free. You sort of pay for it indirectly with your parents' taxes. And the internet is also pretty much free, except you pay for it indirectly via your wireless or via your internet. So comparing the two, that's actually a public space and you need to be a good online cyber citizen, is something that I think that they actually sort of relate to when you compare it to real life areas like a park or like a school. The new playground, we can talk a little bit about cyberbullying if that's a concern for you. I know that it's a very hot topic, that and sexting, which I'm more than happy to talk about if that's a concern. With cyberbullying, I think that a lot of kids are not going online to find porn or to bully other kids or do anything bad. The truth is they really are going on to interact with their friends. A lot of the times you hear kids when they want to argue with you about being on Facebook, they'll say, I really want to be on Facebook, please. I just want to share photos. I just want to talk to my friends. I just want to see their profiles. I just want to talk to my cousin. She's in another state. And that actually is very, very true. They really do want to just go on and hang out with each other. You see it a lot with my friends. Well, kids will just stay online all Friday night, and they'll realize at like 11 or 12 o'clock that they should have gone out, but they just totally didn't even realize it. I think that actually happens a lot now because they just want to hang out online. They can spend hours, I do it too, on Facebook or on AIM, just saying, hi, what's up, miss you, love you, smiley face, for hours. And they don't even realize where the time goes. That's another thing with parents. I think that it's really important to bring those lines back in and to say, you know what, you can be on AIM for this amount of time during a night. We can talk about boundaries later if you want. But then afterwards, you're going to go to bed, or you have to have non-electronic time. And I think the kids actually sort of appreciate that. They don't like it at first, but I think they also appreciate it. A lot of kids, you hear them talk about how they feel trapped by their social networks because they feel like they have to be online or they're not going to be connected. They actually say that girls produce 76% of the content online. Okay, and this makes sense. Girls do most of the talking. That means that boys are online almost just as much. That means they're watching videos, they're gaming, and they're reading what everyone else is writing. So you'll often find this, the difference between boys and girls is boys are very much in, they'll watch, they'll sort of observe, they might chat a little bit, but their lines are like this long, and the girls' lines are like this long in an IM chat if you ever see it. So the boys are much more the watchers, and they also don't like to do a lot of the responsibility with being online. Same thing with homework, typically. Sexting, I'm sure you've been reading about this a lot. We were just quoted, actually, in the Santa Monica daily press about it. Sexting is basically sending sexually explicit images or messages via text. It also includes IM and also putting up profile pictures where there's like they're sexually suggestive. What's interesting is, and there's a study, I'm more than happy to send it to everyone after the presentation, that actually shows the percentage of kids at each age that are sending it. And a lot of the time, sexting actually is a very serious problem, and you do talk to kids about it. Most of the time, it is suggestive. I think that a lot of the news reports are very fear tactic based. I am not fear tactic based. A lot of kids are not actually sending naked pictures of themselves. They are sending suggestive pictures of themselves. There's a lot of, especially like 13, 14-year-old girls who are experimenting with their sexuality. They'll do a lot of the low-cut tops. You see a lot of this pose. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of that pose going on. There's no nudity going on, but it's very suggestive. And a lot of this is happening, and you see pictures of like Miley Cyrus, you see pictures of a lot of the celebrities doing it, and they actually say in the study that that is one of the quoted reasons why girls are more interested in doing it. It's because they see those pictures in every magazine. To them, it doesn't feel like that big of a deal. And a lot of them will say, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I'm not naked. I'm not saying anything that's like really, really explicit. It's just, you know, I'm flirting. And there is no line there for them. Oh, Plaxo. Oh, yeah, that's a type of social network. So there's a couple different social networks out there depending on the age of your child. So the youngest one is Club Penguin. That's the youngest. And then you have Plaxo, Webkinz, maybe a little bit of Girl Zone if you have a girl. It's basically a social network where they have avatars. Avatars are, instead of having a profile picture, you use like a cartoon version of yourself, which I actually prefer. I know that Plaxo does that a lot of the time. It's much better. I think it shows them they shouldn't be showing their real face. They should be showing an avatar, which I think is good. Another thing that's, and a lot of parents will say to me, I get this question a lot, I don't like any of the social networks. I'm just going to unplug it. I'm not dealing with it. I'm just going to turn it off. And here's what I say to that. Before the internet, my parents always tell me that when kids went on the playground, there was a bully or their kid was fighting, or maybe they were on the playground, they didn't get along with people. It was like, okay, well, are they just going to stay in the classroom all break? No, they had to go out on the playground and they had to sort of figure out the rules of the game. They had to learn, this is making me uncomfortable. I should go tell a teacher. I'm going to stand up for myself. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to fight back, and then I'm going to get punched in the face. All those different reactions, those 10 different reactions they can have, it's the same thing online. This is the new playground. You know, the online environment is a way for them to learn those social skills. I know a lot of kids who just don't go on. They either weren't allowed or they don't have an interest in it, which is great if they don't have any interest in it. You're very lucky if they don't have any interest in it yet. They don't go on, and they go on at like 16, 17. The problem is they haven't learned those skills. They haven't learned, gosh, I'm uncomfortable with this comment that someone posted on my picture. What do I do? Do I report it to Facebook admin? Do I tell my school counselor? Do I tell my parent? She might be angry. And learning those rules about the same thing as being on the playground and learning the rules, there's also those rules of being online and figuring out their boundaries. It's what a lot of kids are doing. It depends on the age of your kids. I think that for 16 and 17-year-olds, it's their choice not to interact online, which means that they're deciding to do more offline things. So I think that the fact that now there was only a playground before, so you wanted them to go on the playground because then they had no social interaction. Now there's a choice. They have the choice of online interaction or offline interaction. And I think it's really important that kids are actually choosing the online relationships over the offline relationships. Sorry, the offline relationships versus the online relationships. So that's why I say that it's actually, I think it's good if your kids are more into, you know, having their kids come over and hang out than choosing the other one, if it's a choice. So the question was about privacy and whether parents should have passwords or not, and whether you should let your kids have their own passwords or you should also be kind of the admin and overseeing it. That's a really good question. When I talk to kids and they say, I think that my parents shouldn't have my passwords, it's my Facebook, it's my computer, what I always say is, if your parents would never read your journal, that's definitely your private space. And if you're online or if you're doing something that's actually really private, not just like Facebook privacy settings, but actually really private, that can stay private. But anything that's in a social forum, anything that could be published, anything else, that is your parents' right. As a parent, it is your right to be able to manage your kid's online reputation because anything could be kept for later. So I actually think, depending on the age, of course, that it's really important for parents to have those passwords and not necessarily be checking all the time. In fact, a lot of times just the threat of that you could check all anytime you wanted does the trick right for it, because if kids know, oh, he could be on right now or he could check this later, that's just enough for them to go, you know what, I won't do that. And also, a lot of kids aren't going online to do something devious. Maybe they want to talk to their friends about something they wouldn't want you to see, or maybe they're, you know, again, they don't want to see how they actually chit-chat with their friends. Cursing is a big thing on AIM that they would be embarrassed if their parents were to see. But just the threat of you being there, I think, is sort of a good barrier for them to not do it. And I think a parent should have the passwords. I think it's really important to keep them safe. Yeah, that's a good question. The question was about parental controls and seeing, you know, what kind of profiles they're on and sort of observing their behavior. There's a couple different options for parental controls. There's the lightest way, which is just keeping the computer in a private room. We hear this all the time. If you keep a computer in the private room, they can't do anything. I actually don't think that works. You know, kids are very, very sneaky about coming in the room when you're not in the room, or maybe they do it when a little sibling is there and then the little sibling sees something. So that's the most basic type of parental control. Then there's a step above that where you can check caching and web history. You know, where you can go onto their computer and you can look and see where they've gone. Another thing that happens a lot with Facebook and MySpace is they'll create fake accounts. Have you seen this before, where they'll create an account under, you know, Sarah Levinson, that's their real name, and they'll put up like a few really nice pictures and they'll friend their cousins, but then they have a whole separate account that's Sarah Levinson spelled a little differently, so you wouldn't know that that's their actual profile. I see this a lot with the kids I work with in this city specifically, where they'll have this other profile. The way that parents can easily see that, if there's not a lot of activity on your kid's Facebook profile in that news feed that we saw, if you don't see a lot of activity that's very recent, you should know, okay, they're obviously not very on very much. Maybe they have another account. Also, in the web history, you can often see what will say facebook.com/ and their account name, and you can actually see if the account names are different. So that's the second level of parental controls, just sort of seeing where they've been, seeing what kind of things they're doing. There's also a lot of really great parental control software out there now. We were actually just reviewing one for our blog. It's free. Shockingly, I couldn't believe it's free, but Semantic put it out, where it's totally free and it actually just logs everything. You can log everything. I don't recommend this, but you can see all their IM conversations, look at all their passwords and profiles, look at every video they've watched, every page they watched, and it logs it all for you. But there's levels that you can do on there. That's actually it's an interesting tool to think about. I think it is a great invasion of privacy, especially with some of the private conversations. But that can be really helpful because it will actually list the different things that they went to. Like, for example, we were looking at one, and one of the kids that I was working with, we were testing it. We were trying to break it. People send us a lot of stuff for review. We try to break it and see because that's how we review something, products that are good. And what happened was one of the girls, she was 13, she was searching Bride Wars, that movie that just came out. Yeah, so she had searched Bride Wars, and I could see it. I was her admin. I could see she had searched Bride Wars, and then down below, I had a big red on my page that said porn site. And I was like, oh, this poor, I can't believe she's going to a porn site. And I was like, how did this happen? I was actually able to see in time how she got there. She'd searched Bride Wars into YouTube. The trailer had come up for it. She was watching a bunch of different trailers. I saw all the videos that she was watching. And then the last page before the porn video, I actually went to it and there was a comment in response to the video that said, if you like this video, check out this one too. And she had clicked, I wanted to see this one too. And she was taken to this webpage, totally by accident. Now, if I had been on the first parental control software sort of thing of just sort of looking, I would have freaked out. I would have been like, oh my gosh, she typed into this porn site. But it actually had happened totally by accident. What was great about it was I was able to sort of go to her and I was like, anything happen when you were using the computer? And she was like, no. And I was like, really? Did you go to like kind of a weird site? And she was like, yeah, that was really bad. And she actually was really uncomfortable with it. We were able to sort of talk about it. And she was like, I was like, maybe you should go talk to your mom about it. She's like, yeah, I think I will. And she goes, hey, can you turn on the blocker for me so I don't go to those websites? Golden ticket, right? because she didn't want to be nuanced by that. How often are you yourself looking on the website and you click on the sites you don't like? So I think that that's a parental control software option that's for you, and there's different levels in that software, and it's completely free. So that's another, that's like the most extreme level. Does that answer your question about parental controls? And also you can turn on safe search on Macs and PCs as well, where that is like they make sure that only safe results come back when they go on. And that's a really easy way to sort of keep it so that, you know, they're searching safely. That's a free feature as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't want it to feel overwhelming. It definitely is masterable for sure. And you don't need to have your own Facebook account to understand Facebook. Absolutely not. I'm not saying that you should all go on and be on Facebook. One of the first things that talking about teenagers, what they always want their parents to do is just knowing the terms. That's just the first step, I think. And also, I find a really great tactic is to actually say to your kids, even if it might not be true, hey, like, I want to go on Facebook or MySpace. Don't worry, I won't friend you. Just to find some old friends from high school. Will you show me how it works? A lot of the times, if you get them to explain it to you, you can actually see what their perspective is on the social network, which is a really great way to do it. And you can say to them, you know, I understand that you don't want to be friends with me. Like, that's okay, but I want to know how it works. And in that process, what's great is you can say to them, and you can ask them all the questions you guys are asking me, you can say to them, well, what if one of my friends from high school posts a picture of me that I really hate from back then? What do I do? And it's the same question of what happens when someone posts a bad picture about them, and it makes them think through the situation with you without you being like, well, what are you going to do if someone posts a bad picture of you? Sort of a different way of doing it. In terms of like learning just what keeping up with the trends, that is very, very hard. There's a lot of new trends that are constantly happening. I mean, our website, we have a lot of free tutorials just for this exact purpose. We have a whole video on how to set privacy settings on Facebook. Oh, radicalparenting.com. And we have flyers in the back. You can take them. And we have tutorials, how to set privacy settings on Facebook. We have the most viral YouTube video of the week for teens, which is actually really helpful because teens are on YouTube all the time. And it's some of the videos are quite funny. And if you watch them, you can say to them, hey, have you seen that Fred video that was on recently? And they can be like, oh my gosh, that was so funny. And it's a great table topic to sort of get the conversation started. So we try to really help with that because we understand that it's really overwhelming and sort of translate what how to get there and what the tutorials are on these different websites. So, and you could always email us questions and we'll post the answer for you so that you can find it if we don't already have it up for you. Yeah, for IM conversations, IM is instant messenger. So basically it's like text messaging or email, but very quickly. For those of you who have seen it, it actually sort of looks like Twitter. It's like there's a little box and they sort of type back and forth to each other for people who haven't seen IM. And they go back and forth. It's like a very quick email conversation. Those actually are private. No one would be able to, like a random person or like an employer would not be able to hack in and download all your kids' private messages. The only thing that makes me a little bit nervous is, and I always, when I speak to kids, I always say to them, privacy settings on social networks are like lace curtains. You never know when the website's going to go down. You never know when someone odd's going to friend you. Actually, at Emory, and I always tell this to kids and they always get really nervous. At Emory, I worked as a tour guide. And I would give tours, and after the tour, I'd always friend all of the kids on Facebook. And then afterwards, I would sit on their Facebook profile, and I would log all the things that I saw in their application. Good and bad, there's both. And they had no idea. They were like, a lot of kids will say, oh, Vanessa, they can't see us because they're not my friend. I have my privacy settings on. Well, they didn't even realize that like tour guides were friending them, the person that did the overnight friended them, a professor friended them. And so that's the only way that a lot of the private information could be seen is only if they allow that person access. All the social networks have privacy settings on Club Penguin and Plexo and all those different websites. They actually, sometimes even in Club Penguin, they don't allow you to type anything in. It's all canned responses. Which I actually think is really great. It's all like, you know, hello. There's, you can't actually type anything so that they're having these conversations with 30 things they can choose from. So, you know, that's another thing that the social networks are realizing very quickly that they have to make sure that they're very secure. So the only thing that people could see is if they allow them to see it. I think that there, it's good you brought that up. I think that there are constants in parenting. There's always been a gap. There will always be a gap. You know, I think in the 60s and 70s, it was the gap was between, you know, maybe TV and not TV. Or then in the 80s, it was like rock and roll music and not rock. You know, like there was always that gap. So I think there is constants that go on. I think in the 90s, it was cell phones. Now it's the internet. I heard someone tell a story about this, and I think it's really relevant to the idea of like, well, you know, should I just give up and say that it's explicit? Maybe they understand that it's wrong. It's like the same thing of dropping your kids off at the mall. You know, like when they're 5, 6, 7, you would never leave them there alone, ever. You would only go with them, you'd shop with them, you'd hold their hand. Maybe at 9 or 10, you'd like let them go across to their favorite store while you watched from your store. And maybe at like 11 or 12, you drop them off for an hour while you hung out in the food court. And then like 14, 15, you let them go to the movies by themselves and pick them up right afterwards. And at 17, 18, you let them drive themselves. It's the same, I think, with the internet. It's the same kind of feeling out. And every kid is different. You know, there's some kids that are very mature and responsible, and they get it. They totally understand that this is a dangerous place. Or, you know, they just have to be careful. They have to know what's going to be unsafe and what's not. Also, like, I always liken it to Gossip Girl. You know, it's that kind of TV show that's on TV right now where it's funny. If you watch it with kids, they might love it. Some of the girls, they love it. I have to say, I like it too. Yeah, I'll be honest. But when you're talking about, you'll say to them afterwards, I know you love this show. Do you think it's realistic? And they'll be like, are you kidding? It's so unrealistic. So a lot of them actually do know. And they are very aware. They've read those stories along with you about predators. They've read those stories with you about, you know, MySpace privacy settings falling and having all their pictures leaked. And a lot of times they are just as afraid as you are that their privacy is going to be tapped into. So I think that keeping that dialogue open and kind of feeling out when can I let them go to the mall without watching them, when can I sort of feel it out, it's the same online. There's definitely stages. Definitely. You know, feeling it out with them. Oh, you mean like the remember me? Like if you accidentally log in? I think it's the same thing as like when you accidentally opened your kid's mail, or like, you know what I mean? It's like the same kind of thing. If it were me, and I can only speak from personal experience, I might skim it a little, you know, and I would probably tell them afterwards, you know. I think it's honestly to tell them afterwards that you actually went on there and see what their reaction is. Teenagers are very funny, especially like 9, 10, 11, 12 year olds. You can almost always read their faces to see if to even tell the answer before they even say anything. Like, I love watching parents. They'll be like, oh, I accidentally went on your Facebook page today. Is that okay? And if they, like, you know what I mean? If they make that face, you know, you didn't even have to read it. You know that there was something bad on there. So I think that actually just telling them that it happened and seeing what their initial reaction is can tell you a lot about what was up there without you having to break any privacy at all. I mean, I'm a professional blogger, okay? I did not know that was a career when I went to college at all. There's some things on the internet that is great. I mean, there are some really awesome things that are happening from it. For example, I was speaking at a school in the middle of, like, nowhere. In the middle of nowhere. It was a huge high school in the middle of nowhere. And I did the presentation for the kids. And my presentation for kids is very different than this presentation. And a girl came up to me afterwards, and she was gothic. You know, she had very white makeup and a couple different piercings, and her hair was kind of weird. And she came up to me, and she was like, I just want to thank you for giving that presentation. Because when I talk to kids, I always, always give way more positives than cons. Always, because they love the internet. I love the internet. So for them, there's a lot of good things they find that come out of it. She said, I want to thank you. Usually it's all about, you know, internet safety, not internet savvy. You know, it's not about leveraging the good along with avoiding the bad. And she came up to me and she said, you know, I'm gothic. I don't do drugs. I don't have sex. I don't do anything bad. I just like dressing like this. I like this music. I like this sort of culture. You see it like emo kids, you know, like the emo hair and like the different kind of ways they dress. And she goes, I was so alone until I found other people on MySpace who also dressed and acted like me. They didn't do drugs, they didn't do anything, but I found them, and for the first time ever, I did not feel alone. And I think there is something to be said for that on these social networks. It's a different way for kids to interact with each other. They might be losing some of the body language and some of the etiquette, but they're also gaining totally new skills in the online environment. Just like colleges are marking down the bad things they see on Facebook profiles, they're also marking down the good things. When I would look at pages and saw that she had written a poem on her profile page, cool. You know, that she looked like she was a really good friend. She had all these great friends up there. That she had her link to her website where she had knitting things that she'd done. And she was starting her own little scarf business. We didn't know any of that in her application. So there's also a lot of good things to be said. I think it's no longer the one-page resume when you apply to companies. It's the one-page resume, the Google search, the Facebook page, the LinkedIn page, the MySpace page, the Twitter follower. It's all those things. That can be a good thing, too. Is there some kind of code? There's joke codes, actually. I've seen a couple of them going around where, like, there's email, like, you know, those email chain letters of all the rules of the online dating scene. And one thing that I talked to them about is this, you know, at a dance, at a school dance, you know, you used to go to a high school dance, and it was like the same kind of thing. You know, you had like 6th, 7th, 8th graders who were there, and like the boys were on the other side of the room, and they would, one really brave guy would walk over and maybe start dancing with someone, and the other kid was like, oh, no way, I'm not doing that for another 2 or 3 years at least. It's sort of the same kind of thing. You know, at a dance before, you would dance with them, you'd ask them what school they went to, you'd ask for their phone number, maybe you'd call them, maybe you'd start chatting on the phone, you'd go to the mall, you'd have a little date. Now it's very different. Now you go to a dance. The first question, are you on Facebook? Are you on Twitter? What's your AIM? What's your screen name? Then you start talking on screen name. No phone yet. Oof, that's a big step. Screen name first, you IM a little bit, you message every once in a while, you poke them on Facebook. You ever seen this? You poke people. You send them a virtual Barbie. You send them a virtual thing of roses. You message them. You write it on their wall. You see who else's wall they wrote on. You tag their picture. You comment on their profile. Then maybe you text them. Ask for the number. You text them. You text them back and forth. Now you've gone from IMing to texting. This is a step in the teen dating cycle. I do a teen dating talk, which is always really fun. And then you have the texting. And then then they'll ask, okay, let's talk. And they start talking. So it's like I actually think this is a good thing. I think that there's a lot more steps now to actually meeting in person. There's a lot longer courting now that goes on. And I think that they are learning it actually on the fly. There is no really unspoken rules. It's kind of like that rule, you never date your best friend's friend. You never date your ex-girlfriend's, all those rules. Like, they're sort of spoken, but they're not really written anywhere. You know, it's kind of like that. It's sort of the same thing. And people do break up with people via email. It's just not very, it's very tactless. I think watching those videos with them, be like, hey, I've never really heard of this YouTube thing. Will you show me some of your favorite videos? Watch them get so excited that you want to see. Even if you don't know anything about YouTube or anything, while you're on there, you can be like, hey, what are those videos? Hey, what's that? Hey, what's that? And because you're in their element with them, it's in their element. They'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm sharing, I'm explaining. It's a great way to bond. And they're also learning the repercussions for that, I think, as well. Like when you say when they're having like more dangerous conversations online, I think that's true. But not only could those repercussions come from you guys, they can also have their own repercussions, and they are feeling those. And it's actually sort of interesting to see the self-policing that goes on in some of the teen forums and the teen online communities, because they do it. You know, not everyone, you know, there might be one person who's sending something inappropriate, or, you know, says something inappropriate to someone else, or maybe bullies someone or stirs the pot. We got a lot of stirs. You know, there's very few bullies. Most of them are stirs. They will actually police each other and call each other out on it. So that's also become a thing where they never had that before, but because it's so public, in the sense, because IM conversations can easily be taken a screenshot of or copy and pasted, they'll actually call each other out. Where, you know, recently there was a big, at one of the private schools, they kept it very hush-hush, there was a cyberbullying incident where one of the kids had written something very, very mean to the other. And then she'd copied it and showed one of her other friends that she did this ha-ha. And their friend was like, oh, this is not so good. So she just like, what do you think? And she sent it to another friend to be like, this is sort of bad, don't you think? And then she sent it to someone else. And all the students had already gotten back at this girl, and they were like, you shouldn't do that. Like, that is so wrong. Before the parents and teachers had any idea. And she was very severely punished by her peers for being mean to this girl. And eventually the teachers actually found out about it, but it had already sort of been taken care of amongst themselves, which is sort of an interesting thing that we're starting to see. You know, it's interesting that you bring that up about the password thing and about kids logging onto each other. It was the same thing as like when you were on the phone and someone was sitting quietly on the third call waiting. Same. It's exactly the same now. That's a very, and that happens a lot, where kids will log into an IM and they'll just start talking to people on behalf of the other person. And what's interesting, it's a very, very good lesson in learning to keep your password secure. You know what? I'd rather have them learn it in 6th and 7th grade than when their bank account password gets stolen. You know, they're learning that much earlier than we were. I mean, my friend's identity got stolen as a senior in college because she hadn't learned that lesson yet. I'm glad they're learning it now because they're realizing, wow, I can't share my password. I shouldn't do automatic keychains. I should make sure that I keep it really private. I need to learn who I can trust. It's another thing that you're seeing a lot of now with the cotton candy friendships. They're very shallow, and they're learning that very quickly. And before, they didn't have a litmus test. Now they do. They have this sort of litmus test to see, gosh, I asked her to take down that picture from the pool party and she didn't. I thought she was one of my best friends. She clearly knew how upset I was about that. It's a very quick litmus test to be able to see who are real friends and who aren't. Right, and then what happened, that's okay for a while. That's okay, that was okay for me for a while. In fact, I was like so excited that I'm about to break 1,000 friends on Facebook. I am so excited, can I just tell you? And there's no reason. I could not tell you who half those people are on my Facebook page, but it's sort of addicted until you get to those moments where you really need someone to talk to. And that's when you have kids who are, you know, have a little breakdown in their room or get home from school. And like, have you ever noticed when kids get home from school, they're like holding their breath all day and then they're finally like, and then it like, bleh, like verbal vomits all out. I sort of feel like it gets like that with some of these Facebooks. Like, I got a friend, everyone, I got to be friends with everyone, I got to talk to this person. And then all of a sudden when they stop to take a breath and they realize they need help with something or they want support or they want to know someone, there's no one there. And it's like, it sort of unravels. And what's important is, and I think that the only way for them to do it is to learn it themselves, is to be there for when they unravel, is to say to them, you know what? This is great, you're having so many friends. I'm glad it's so much fun. If you ever feel like you need real friends or you feel like you want to interact with people, you know, at our house, or you want to have people over, or who are your closest friends, having those kind of discussions with them so they can realize there are different levels of friendship. You know, that's okay. It's okay to have 900 of your 936 friends on Facebook be sort of like surface friends as long as they realize they are surface friends. I think that all online teaching should start the second they pick up the mouse. Because a lot of places they're going, you might not even realize are sort of these social forums, like YouTube is a social network. The shared interest is videos. So I think it should start right now, and it can start really, really lightly, if you will. And you can tell them about this presentation tonight. I'm more than happy to send you articles and be like, hey, do you agree with this? I love when parents give like our articles to teenagers and they're like, I don't agree with this. I don't agree with this. I don't agree with this. At least you're talking. Yeah, I think talking to them about, you know, if you have any of your own experiences of your friends going on Facebook, and maybe you think it's weird, or, you know, maybe someone at work is going on Facebook or LinkedIn, or what do they think about that? Just getting the conversation started so they can start to think that something that's coming up is better than waiting until it sort of comes at you. And talk to them about the issues that we talk about here. Maybe it's not even in their awareness yet, but if you talk to them about it first, it's sort of in their, like, realm of familiarity before it actually comes to them. Which is, I think, sort of important. Tell them what you don't know, I think, is what's, like, actually asking them. Be like, there was this whole presentation tonight about Facebook and MySpace, and I'm just not really, so I don't really know it or anything. Do you know more about it than I do? Actually pointing out to them what you don't know and then learning it together is some of the best ways that you can build the foundation, because you're learning it with them. So often, teenagers, and they tell me this all the time, they're like, we're constantly being told what people know. We want once for someone to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So I think one of the most powerful things to do is actually say to them, I don't know about this. Either could you teach me or can we learn it together? I think that's a great place to be. Yes, that free software monitors all the YouTube videos. YouTube only has one rating, inappropriate and not. And when they go, by the way, on their settings, it will say, if it's any video that has been flagged inappropriate, before anyone clicks on it, you, me, them, it will say, this video has been flagged as inappropriate. Are you 18 years old? And they have to click accept. So, I mean, of course, anyone could click accept, but they are definitely aware of those videos. And there are parental control softwares that monitor all those things, and it will flag the video if they are going onto those ones. Yes, you can either just monitor or you can monitor and block. Either one. I can send you all the information so you can log on. It's actually in only by invite only, but anyone who's here tonight, I can give you the invite for. Okay. This is a really good question. Thank you for bringing that up. Skype and iChat, people use both. What's interesting was I was staying at my parents' house, and I have a sister who's 17 and a sister who's 14, and we were like sitting at breakfast, and we hear like, oh, those look good. I was like, and my sister had set up her computer so that we were having breakfast with her friend. And I was like, is that Sarah? Hi. She's like, hi. She's like sitting eating her bowl of cereal because she doesn't have any siblings and she was really jealous. So Skype and iChat, a lot of them, they use the built-in computers and Macs, or they use external webcams to just sit and just look at each other. A lot of the times they don't even want to talk. They'll just sit and do homework together. Those iChat study sessions, have you seen those before? Have they tried to convince you that they're studying on those? Or I just have to go on AIM to ask them a really quick homework question, right? Yeah, all the time. So that's what they're saying. I actually think that there is something to that. There is something for them to go online and have like virtual study sessions and do these sort of collaborative things. What I always say with kids, because they actually have boundary issues with this as well, is helping them realize to make an agenda before they get online. Say, okay, you can sit on Skype or AIM or whatever. Either you have a time limit, or you can talk about the following questions. That's it. That can help them a lot keep their boundaries. And a lot of times they just want to sit and look at their friends. They just want to sit with them together. And they watch YouTube videos together that way. We are learning along with you. I think that's something that, just like there are new technologies you guys are learning, we are also learning them. They are new at some of these social networks just like you guys are. And it also, if you feel like you're in a bad moment with them, it definitely gets better. A lot of the times they feel like they're the only vulnerable ones in the relationship. And sometimes it's so nice for them to hear that you're also having some trouble with it as well. That can make them open up to you a lot. So, and I love doing this. I love speaking to you guys. I would love all your emails. I love the job that the schools are doing with cyberbullying. Kids know about this now. Great. They've really stepped up in that in the past year, and that was a really very quick thing that happened. They're doing a very good job with that. They're recently starting the sexting curriculum. That has already been talked about. One thing that sounds silly, but it's something that I actually am very worried about. I've been talking to administrators all around the school. I consult with a lot of different schools. Spelling is in grammar is a big problem. I'm actually more concerned about spelling and grammar than I am about some of the sexting stuff, because have you ever asked your child to write with your hand a paragraph for you on something? It was really sad. I was sitting with a couple of college professors, and they actually forwarded me a few essays, in-class essays, brilliantly written essays, horribly misspelled. I mean, embarrassingly so. And so one thing I wish I was seeing schools doing more is actually having more in-class essays, more in-class writing assignments, and making them really pay attention to the spelling, because that's one of my big concerns. I know that sounds very old school, but. Thank you.